Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bachelor. The Four Seasons hotel chain, luxury, but a puzzle in Beirut, a puzzle in Damascus, a puzzle around the world. Because what we're looking at here is the Syrian regime led by Bashar al-Assad enjoying the fruits of war and extreme depredation of the whole region, not just Syria, damaging Beirut, damaging Turkey, damaging Israel, damaging Jordan, damaging the whole world, being rewarded with what you'd have to say celebratory hospitality to the United Nations in the Four Seasons in Damascus. We can presume that it also carries on in Beirut, but we'll concentrate now on Damascus. David Adesnik is the director of research at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy and brings to my attention in a recent piece what the UN makes of Syria and Assad after all these years of mass murder. There's no other polite word necessary. David, a very good evening to you. This strange conduct of the United Nations, and the reason you feature it is because of the amount of money they've spent at the Four Seasons. Is this ordinary conduct by the United Nations when visiting other regimes that are suspect of war crimes? Good evening to you.
Good evening. It's a good question, a somewhat depressing one. There's definitely a long and problematic record of the United Nations effectively being co-opted by very abusive regimes that are hosting its operations, even if the regime itself created the need for those operations through a brutal war, obviously Assad being the case in point here. But in fact, shortly before, the UN itself was trying to learn lessons, and it was wringing its hands over its conduct during the war in Sri Lanka, which didn't register for many Americans around a decade ago. But similar problems were there, and in other examples in Somalia and Ethiopia in the past. But this one is especially egregious, and it's not new in the sense that the UN releases data pretty much each July on its procurement spending, its contracts, its purchase orders. And they just released this year's data, meaning covering 2021, and we saw $11.5 million of new spending at the Four Seasons Damascus, bringing the sort of acknowledged total to around $81.6 million.
The spending is visitors, hotel charges, and what is especially fascinating is you have a peek at who gets this money. Who owns the Four Seasons franchise? Who runs this operation in the middle of Damascus?
Sure, that's an important question. So the minority owner is the Syrian Ministry of Tourism. Like the rest of the Syrian government, it is under sanctions, and the U.S. forbids doing business with it, although the U.N. does not have to abide by those restrictions. The majority owner since 2019 is Samer Fals, someone also under sanctions, because he's a financier of Assad, basically a war profiteer integral to the regime. The U.S. and the EU have sanctioned him. He bought it off of a Saudi prince who was being held up apparently at the Ritz-Carlton back when there was sort of a purge of the Saudi oligarchy a while back. And actually, I should just mention that when the U.S. designated the hotel by name, actually, the Four Seasons parent company did the right thing. They're based in Canada, and they immediately put out a statement saying, we are breaking our relationship with the Damascus branch. So everyone still calls it the Four Seasons. The UN billing records that they release say Four Seasons. But this doesn't necessarily reflect in any way poorly on a hotel chain whose services we may value for honeymoons or special trips. This is a Damascus problem.
Yes, and let's look into how over the years the Assad regime has been regarded. You link us to reports about how the regime diverts humanitarian aid. What scale is that? And does the UN have a comment about diversion of aid while it's visiting Damascus at the Four Seasons Hotel?
Right. So interesting. One of the reasons I picked up on this is that 6 years ago, a couple of journalists and researchers were the first to spotlight this when the UN started releasing data. And they, along with the Guardian newspaper, published an article saying that Assad may be, or the hotel may be, taking in as much as 9.5 million. And she created a kerfuffle at the UN. At the time, it was a substantial embarrassment. These are mostly expenses to house UN staff there. I think it's hundreds of staffers basically live at the Four Seasons. Earlier on, there was something of a security rationale for doing that. Obviously, Damascus was in the midst of an active civil war, and you could be quite threatened. But even then, my understanding, I've heard it two ways. One is that Damascus simply insisted the UN stay at the hotel. And the other, that when the UN said, where is it safe? The regime said, oh, well, we can only really ensure your safety at the Four Seasons. And there was compliance with that. And basically, we've seen the problem sort of snowball from there. And I've seen this data come out every year. I publish on it. Others have mentioned it. And despite all that, the UN doesn't change what it does.
The United Nations, I understand it must travel to places that are forbidding. And I understand they must deal with unsavory characters. But Assad, isn't he historically outside the pale of ordinary dictators, given the reports that we've had about his conduct of the civil war and the refugee flight from Syria and the extreme disorder of the refugee camps in Lebanon and the flow of Syrian refugees into Europe? I mean, this is not a small matter here. We're dealing with a man who's responsible for dislocating millions, causing, I don't have a number of deaths, and at the same time, damaging the economy of the whole region.
Yeah, so one of the ironies of this is that the UN is also one of the bodies documenting these crimes. You know, it has different arms that may not ever be responsive to the other. So there is, under the auspices of the Human Rights Council, a commission of inquiry on Syria. That commission of inquiry has done some very admirable work, releases reports quarterly, if not more frequently, documenting everything you just described, almost every kind of unimaginable abuse under the sun, really some of the gravest kind of torture, including, you know, rape and sexual torture institutionalized in Syrian prisons. You may be familiar with Caesar, the pseudonym of the photographer who defected from the regime with images of torture, apparently 10,000 disfigured corpses and 55,000 images. So there's no question that this regime is far beyond the pale, even of strongmen. But the key issue is the UN, in many ways, is so imprisoned by the idea of sovereignty that it has to always work with anyone who can claim the mantle of being a sovereign government. And then it goes too far. It goes far beyond what it has to do. And it compromises with sovereign powers just to preserve its operations.
To stay with the theme of the Four Seasons, we travel now to Beirut. And there is a Four Seasons in Beirut, and it's my imagination that the negotiation between Lebanon, Syria, and Egypt over natural gas took place in the Four Seasons, and we keep the credit cards flowing here. But in any event, wherever it took place in Beirut, the signature of this document, joining Lebanon, Syria, and Egypt in a natural gas deal, that is a direct boost to the Assad regime, correct? Is there any other way of reading this?
Well, the administration would prefer if you read it another way. I did a memo recently. My analysis is it's probably $40 to $50 million the Assad regime will get. Basically, it's a transfer site. The gas is coming from Egypt. The electricity is coming from Jordan. They need to pass through Syria to get to Lebanon, which has a desperate need. But you have to give someone a cut if their pipelines and their transmission towers and infrastructure is bringing it through. And it's roughly 8% will go to Assad. Sometimes people often emphasize it's likely to be in kind, not in cash. He'll take gas and electricity rather than dollars. It's a direct benefit to him. When you hear the Biden administration talk about it, their emphasis is that, well, Lebanese people really need it. And that's true. There is deep need in Lebanon. I'm just firmly of the belief there are better ways to deal with shortages in Lebanon than a substantial payoff to Assad.
All right, two instances using the hotels as examples of what's going on, of Syria being in some way rewarded for being an unacceptable governance. Is there a policy in Washington, the Biden administration now, towards Assad, personally towards Assad? Is he regarded as a man who is a war criminal?
Yeah, I think they have no problem saying straight out that he's a war criminal. Saying what that should mean for U.S. policy has been more of a problem. You know, in the sort of official bullet points that comprise U.S. policy, one of them is accountability for war crimes. But that really runs up against the reality of some of the other bullet points, or even things that are not necessarily said explicitly. One is, of course, that they're willing to, you know, sort of push these war crimes aside for a while if that's what it takes to get this deal in place for Lebanon. Also, the Biden administration has basically given up on putting new sanctions on Assad, despite the strong new sanctions powers that Congress gave the president in 2020. It was a bipartisan initiative. The final votes were by voice on most of these issues, if not by overwhelming majority. So it's not a partisan issue. The Trump administration, it had an inconsistent Syria policy, but when it had these authorities, it used them. For around 5 months, the Biden administration said it would use them, and then it quietly stopped just around the same time that it started pushing for this gas deal.
Final thought, David, and I don't have a report on this, I'm just reasoning. Mm-hmm. Is this part of the negotiation over the reawakening of the Iran deal? Is Syria enjoying the outcome of the Iran deal, even in anticipation? Because there has been sanction lifting talk in Tehran.
Yeah. I think that it's very hard to draw a direct line. I think the administration knows enough to be extremely careful rather than saying it would sort of give a get out of jail free card, to speak, to a butcher like Assad to facilitate the Iran deal. It's hard to say. I think in general, on just about every challenge in the Middle East linked to Iran, they've taken a less firm stance than the previous administration, which of course pulled out of the deal and was fairly confrontational with Iran. So, you know, it fits a pattern, but they've never said anything that would make it explicit.
David Adesnik, Senior Fellow and Director of Research at the Foundation of the Defense of Democracies. I'm John Powell.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.